Hey, Fanboy Nation.
This is your pal Daffy Duck, and you're watching.
We're watching.
You're watching Fanboy.
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 A fanboy, etc.
Fanboy Nation.
Dot, I assume, Tom.
Gentlemen, it is a great pleasure to talk to you today. Neil deGrasse Tyson, Scott Kennedy, we are talking about Shot in the Arm. I'm going to play devil's advocate throughout the interview, if you don't mind.
Go for it.
You do you. You do okay.
You know, one thing I want to ask, because this is an anti-vaxxer documentary. We'll pick on COVID to start with, since that's the most recent phenomenon. Okay. Where the push was everyone had to get the vaccine, but there was no consideration for people that had adverse effects to medication that were scared of that. Like for myself, I'm allergic to the Z-Pak. I'm allergic to cats. I have friends allergic to shellfish. I know that the Moderna one affected people that had shellfish allergies. So would that have made people more apprehensive because of this one size fits all method versus taking into consideration people that have adverse effects to medication?
But that's not my memory of how that went down. Each medicine, each of these vaccines were tested for adverse reactions. And there's a list of what risk factors are there for one vaccine versus another. And there are some people, if not precisely you, there are some people who cannot take vaccines because they have very severe reactions to them. So that becomes incumbent on the rest of us to be vaccinated to protect them for those who cannot be vaccinated. So whatever you're remembering, it's not how I remember that going down at the time. Scott, okay. what's your memory at the time?
Yeah, no, it's not just the memory of it. It's let's start with having empathy for anybody who could or did have a tough reaction to a vaccine. Maybe it was because of the vaccine, or maybe it could be psychosomatic. I don't mean that in any disrespectful way, but there's obviously things that can come from anxiety. But the big picture of science and vaccines, there's no one that were working on these vaccines, looking at the safety of these vaccines and bringing these vaccines to the world that said they are 100% safe for anybody that would take them. That's never been said. It's not on the packaging. That's nothing to do with them. It is,
by the way, that's true for all medicines. They're not 100% safe. Right. Correct. Every medicine, correct. No matter what. Right.
Correct. Right. Correct. Mm-hmm. So that it's all about the risk assessment of, is that risk of some of the elements that you talked about worth taking? Or, and I'm hoping that everybody that you talked about that may have had some kind of a reaction is still with us. They didn't die, correct? Right. So that's part of the risk assessment. But sadly, and I'm not saying that you're using this way, but some people will use that fact that it isn't perfect, the vaccine isn't perfect, that there could be a reaction to say, see, they're not telling you the whole story, which isn't true because they're selling it at the beginning. Or somebody might take that and say, look, you can't trust it because somebody had a reaction. And it's like, wait a minute, risk assessment. The risk of that problem, even if it was possibly dangerous, but somebody survived it, is very, very, is this small compared to the benefit of how many lives the vaccine saved in the end. So these are complicated conversations to have, but let's look at the whole element of the best.
And by the way, as an educator, I think we are under-instructed in probability and statistics throughout our years in school. And so we come out hearing passionate testimony and going with the passionate testimony rather than the bar chart or the pie chart that captures thousands of results all in one encapsulated illustration, because we react to interpersonal emotion. And of course, advertisers know this and exploit it to no end. So, like Scott said, there's a risk that you will die from COVID, and there's a risk that you'll have an adverse reaction to the vaccine. So what's it going to be? And there's your responsibility to other people that you don't then pass the otherwise just you become a survivalist and no one is going to track you down and ram a needle into your shoulder if you live in the woods, okay? But the moment you step into civilization and drink our water supply and expect the police to, the fire department to come if there's a fire and all the other things and have the food delivered to your grocery store on the corner, then you have a pact, implicit pact with others that we would keep each other safe. And all these go into those decisions.
And to be clear, now, no one made anybody get the vaccine either, right?
What's that you say?
No one made anybody get the COVID vaccine.
No, well, let's say that more fairly.
Yeah.
It would cost you something if you denied the vaccine and you didn't otherwise have a medical reason to not get the vaccine. Okay, what will it cost you? Well, your workplace could say you can only come in if you're vaccinated. Therefore, you can't work there unless you do. Okay? So you're not free to go in there and infect other people and increase the risk of infecting other people for you then getting the whatever is the variant was that
but
was
you still could choose not to go to that job. That's what I was saying.
That's right. That's right. You have the freedom to not work there.
Correct.
And like I say, become a survivalist. Mm-hmm.
And the documentary also touches on measles and the hysteria against the MMR vaccine. And the one question I asked everybody that was against the MMR vaccine was, your doctor allows you to split it up into three separate shots instead of the one shot. Why not go that option if that's how you took it and you felt it worked better for you than to take the one and done shot where you have the medical responsibility for yourself to say, no, I want it divided into three.
So what was the reaction? You said you posed that question to people. What was their reaction?
It was, you know, I don't want it. It was...
They still don't want
know,
it.
Right. My doctor, you know, my doctor said they wouldn't do it. And I was like, you know...
Okay, so they still didn't want it.
Response. Yeah, one was they didn't want it. The other one said the doctor wouldn't do it.
They moved the goalpost. They might possibly move the goalpost a little bit. Mm-hmm. So I would... I don't know if this is not answering your question, but I would look at it from a slightly different angle. When our first child was born, Tesley Kennedy, in 2006, these conversations around fear around MMR was pretty big. Sadly, still is pretty big. Andrew Wakefield has fraudulent study had not even been retracted yet. So we heard
it was still alive and percolating there. Yeah.
Yes, it was affected. Yeah. Its negative effects on the world were out there. So I had friends. We're in Los Angeles, California, and we had plenty of liberal-leaning friends that were saying, well, don't get all the vaccines or spread out the vaccines or split them up as you were saying. But luckily I didn't stop with those friends that put some concerns in my mind and my wife's mind. We went to our doctor and went to friends who were doctors and we went to friends who were scientists. And we looked at the consensus and they said, by and large, like by just the most enormous metrics, these vaccines are much safer than they are harmful and they're the right thing to do for your child. So I was actually grateful for that, not as a lemming. I was grateful that the data showed me that and my shoulders got to go, oh, I can take at least that one off the list of the million things that I worry about as a parent. So I trusted in the science that told me that these vaccines were safe and effective.
In the documentary, you get to talk to Robert Kennedy Jr. You talk to several other people that have been the biggest proponents of anti-vaccine vaccinations. And for the most part, you are able to retain a level head and not let your personal ideologies and your worldview infect the interview, which I've noticed happens far too often in documentaries where, you know, the interviewer becomes antagonistic.
This is the first thing I noticed on the first draft that I saw, because I know Scott interpersonally, and he could be a turd, you know, when he wants to be. But during the interviews, he's just asking simple questions. He's not preaching. And I said, all right, he knows what he's doing here. And so I agree. I'm glad you noticed it too, because it was the first thing I noticed. It would have been easy to pull a what's the dude's name? Moore? What's the name?
Michael Moore.
Pull a Michael Moore on this and then hand you your opinion as the viewer. He could have easily attempted to do that and he didn't.
And that's something I find very commendable in this, because you're allowing people to come to their own conclusions, even though we clearly know that you disagree with their ideology.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. It still works.
It's not just ideology. I disagree with their understanding what's verifiably true. That's what I disagree with. I don't care.
Very important distinction. You can have ideologies that are in and of themselves ideas that people want to implement, but that cannot be decided amongst by objective truth, just by vibrant political cultural debate. When you have an objective truth, it's not a matter of ideology. It's a matter of are you going to go with it or are you not? And what else do we have science for if not to find objective truths around which to base laws, legislation, and human conduct?
And then the second half, that would be if someone is not using a verifiable truth, they can cause great harm. And we're trying to expose that.
Especially if they have power over others.
That's right.
And to the level of legislation and the like.
Well, Neil, you know, you and I both have a wrestling background.
Oh.
And, you know, we're both mat men in this regard. And we know that professional wrestling came from real wrestling. But we also know the fact that professional wrestling, tent revivals, and political debates all ended up on the carnival circuit. And we see a lot of the same carny tricks being used by both sides in their promotion in emotional manipulation. How do we remove the politics out of medicine and science in this regard and display the facts and go, look, this is the deal. And it's up to you whether you want to adhere to it or not. But like you said, there are certain consequences, and go from there.
That's a brilliant and perceptive point that I think has its, maybe I haven't thought about it more deeply than I should, than I already have. But to me, if I were going to point the finger, I would point the finger at K-12 education, where you, nowhere do you actually learn what science is and how and why it works. You just learn that there's things that science has discovered, and they shove it in a textbook. And the words are bold-faced that you memorize for the exam, and then you move on. In there should be a persistent exposure to how science works. We query nature. We doubt ourselves. We check our biases at the door. The biases that remain that we don't know we have colleagues check it. There's peer review. Peer review continues, and then other people verify it. By the way, this is a faceless, nameless process in the eyes of the public. Whereas a charismatic person, you see them and they say, I'm for you. I'm defending your health. That's irresistible against big pharma, big medicine, big government, big science. There's even a quote in there, Scott, RFK is saying, if a scientist tells you he's an expert, don't trust them. What's that actual quote?
He says, if somebody tells you to trust the science, don't trust them.
Yeah, it's like, what, how did you even utter that quote? And by the way, in a free country, you should be able to utter anything. Yes. So then your real defenses are, what have you learned in K-12 to, dare I use the word, inoculate yourself against the declarations of those who have charisma and are telling you what you want to hear.
That's right. That's what he's doing right there, Neil. He's saying something to make somebody think, oh, he's going to keep me from being a lemming, right? He's cheating it to make it seem like if you trust in the science, you're being a lemming. And there's not you're not trusting in science as one word. You're trusting in the process of science as you just described.
Yeah, I'm going to leave you with this last question. Absolute. So during the pandemic, when the COVID vaccine was created, I knew people on the far left that absolutely refused to take it because it was under the Trump administration. Trump gets unelected. Biden gets in, and instantly they were the ones ready, first ones in line. I knew quite a few people. I live in Southern California. That's the way it was. And my reaction was, what made you think that they started all over again? They're like, orange guys, like you thought Pfizer sat there and go, hey, the orange guy's gone, the senile guy's in, now it's safe to start over and take it. It's the same vaccine one way or the other. So, you know, what do we tell the people that we're politicizing it on both sides of the aisle when the leftists I knew wouldn't take it because Trump was in charge? And then the people on the right wouldn't take it because Biden's in charge.
Let's not let them get in charge.
Yeah, I like I said, it's an educational thing. You would never get to that point if people had a science literacy that precludes being swayed by and to even just know how systems work. The FDA, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, and a lot of that is sort of operates independent of the president, right? They're there with or without the president, no matter who the president is or isn't. And I think Trump wanted to take credit for the speed with which the first vaccine came available, Operation Warp Speed or Warp Drive or whatever. And what was it called again?
Operation Warp Speed. Yeah,
Warp Speed.
That was a great name.
But that ignores the fact that the medical frontier has been working on this like for the longest time leading up to it. And so it became a very convenient, opportunistic combination of the need for a virus and the need for a vaccine and the capacity to make one on relatively short notice. It was 6 months or less than a year for sure it was.
Yeah. What's worse about that, I did not make a movie to be to take political sides. I want to wrestle with the human condition, as Paul Offit says, science isn't political, at least it shouldn't be political. But what's frustrating about the Trump situation that you were just describing, Neil, is he wanted to really have his cake in it too. He wanted credit for Operation Warp Speed, but then he also wanted to not talk about vaccines around some of his followers who came to put being anti-vax.
Who were anti-vax, right? Protect your followers.
That's the worst that you can do as a politician, is just say, hey, I'll say whatever you want, make sure I get your vote, instead of these are the cold, hard facts.
No, that's the worst you can do as a leader. That's highly expected if you're a politician.
That's fair enough.
Make that clear.
Well, Mitt Romney does say it very
gentlemen,
well.
Gentlemen, it's been a great pleasure chatting with you. Yeah.
Oh, sorry, we're cutting off. All good. Sorry to interrupt you.
Well, no, I got the 1 minute warning, so I have to say my goodbyes because I could talk to you all day about this.
So
but Neil deGrasse Tyson and Scott Hamilton, thank you so much for talking to me about A Shot in the Arm from Black Valley Films, coming to Los Angeles at the Lemley Cinemas on November 17th. It's been a great pleasure talking to you.
Yeah.
And Scott, I hope you had a fun conversation with your cousin, as a distant relative.
Yeah, thankfully not related, but yes, thank you.
All right.